Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today. I want you to get your very best event crashing or party crashing story together for the next segment of the program. We're going to open up the phones. I want to hear about what risk you took or what the payoff was when you snuck into a concert, a sporting event, a big party that you weren't invited to. Now, we're not encouraging anything that's illegal here, but I want to hear the story. That's coming up later this hour on Air Talk. First, we turn our attention to a very interesting study out of Caltech in Pasadena that attempts to factor in cloud cover to climate change and what happens as the temperature heats up. What are the effects on cloud cover? And if clouds are affected significantly, what then is the effect on temperature from that shift? Joining us is lead author of the new study, Professor of Environmental Science and Engineering at Caltech, Tapio Schneider. Professor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. So we have all these different models of climate change that are coming out, trying to predict how rapidly the increase will be in temperature, what the effects will be on ocean level and all those different things. Has there been much that's looked at clouds and the interaction between clouds and temperature?
Well, it is well known that clouds are very important for regulating Earth's temperature. If you just think of the marine layer clouds off the coast here, they're essentially a white blanket over the ocean reflecting sunlight back to space that otherwise would be absorbed. So they cool the Earth's surface. That's well known. Climate models try to represent clouds, but the problem is they literally fall through the cracks of the models. So the models compute the climate on what we call a computational grid that's maybe 10 to 100 kilometers wide. Clouds are much smaller and they fall through the cracks, and hence it has been very uncertain how clouds respond to climate change and how cloud changes feed back on temperature changes.
So in this study, how were you able to sort of keep the cloud effect front and center?
So we know the equations governing clouds. We can put them on a computer and solve them. We just cannot do it on a globe. We can do it in smaller patches of the globe. So what we did is we simulated a patch of atmosphere over a subtropical ocean, say, think of the coast of California, and did this as very high resolution that the computational mesh was only 10 meters or so wide. And so it's much finer than a typical climate model that allows us to say what clouds do, but the price we pay is that we can only simulate a patch of clouds, not the whole globe.
And so as in all these studies, there's a lot of noise, right? Because you're relying on this computational model creating a kind of artificial environment to gauge future environment. That's difficult.
It is. There's a good part of things we understand very well, just physics going into it, Newton's laws of motion. In our particular study, we had to make compromises in saying what the atmosphere as a whole does to that patch of cloud we can represent. And that's where the noise or the uncertainties come in. We don't quite know how winds, say, change as the clouds change, because we couldn't explicitly simulate it on a computer.
Now, about 50 million years ago, there was a significantly different climate that I understand researchers weren't able to explain, you know, with CO2 emissions. They had to come up with some. And your model can explain for that?
It provides a possible explanation. So 50 million years ago, during what we call the Eocene, there were crocodiles living in the Arctic. The Arctic was guaranteed to be frost-free. It was around Greenland. It was lush rainforest types.
Really green.
Warm, really green. And CO2 concentrations were higher, much higher than now, maybe four times higher than they are now. We know that. But if you put CO2 concentrations about four times as high as they are right now into a climate model and see how warm it gets, the Arctic does not get frost-free. It doesn't allow for crocodiles to live there. And so there was a conundrum that we know it was warm. We found crocodile bones on Ellesmere Island, for example. Yet climate models couldn't produce the warmth that we know was there with CO2 concentrations that we think were reasonable for the time. So something was missing in the models. And what our study suggests is that there may have been a very strong cloud feedback. So what could happen at high enough CO2 concentrations, more than three times what we have right now, is that these marine layer clouds that we see off the coast here, our May gray, June gloom, that they melt away completely. And when they melt away, this white blanket over the oceans is removed, and the Earth overall warms by a lot, possibly by as much as 14 degrees. And that would be enough to account for crocodiles in the Arctic.
So that's fascinating. Clouds have that much of an effect. You're talking a 14-degree average difference.
Yes, it's enormous. So these marine layer or stratocumulus clouds, as they're called, they cover about a fifth of the tropical oceans. So they have an enormous effect. They cover vast areas of the globe. You take them away, you get a lot of extra warming because the white blanket that reflects sunlight is removed. Dark ocean is exposed to the sun.
We're talking with Caltech researcher Tapio Schneider, professor of environmental science and engineering at Caltech, lead author of the study that was recently published in Nature Geoscience. The study takes a look at clouds and if we lost the cloud layer that we have as a result of climate change caused by CO2 emissions, that then it could create this sort of a feedback loop in which the temperatures would rise even more dramatically than have been predicted with models that don't look at the removal of that sort of cloud filter. If you have questions for our guest, we're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. This kind of a change, I understand, wouldn't happen in our lifetime, but could be as soon as a century you'd start to see this effect?
At the earliest in a century, if we continue emitting a lot of greenhouse gases, CO2, which I do not think is actually likely. I think we'll see technological change well before that to slow emissions. But if emissions would continue to rise unabatedly, rapidly, about 100 years from now would be the earliest you could see that.
And then, so looking down the road, if you lost the cloud cover, I mean, is it possible that the future would look like that Eocene period you described with crocodiles in the Arctic?
Before you get to an Eocene-time climate, you would also need to melt all ice sheets and the like, and that takes hundreds, thousands of years. So it wouldn't be immediate, but no question, if actually these clouds would melt away, it would be a dramatically different world, a much, much warmer world.
And is that something that, I mean, obviously we did come back from that. We have very different climate now. Is that something potentially humans could engineer back from the brink like that?
Well, I hope we'll never get to the brink. So I don't want to be in a situation where we have to engineer back, but let's engineer that we never get there. I think that's the more plausible way forward. If you would actually cross the threshold, you lose the clouds, it may be difficult to get them back immediately. So even if you remove CO2 from the atmosphere, if you find a good way of scrubbing the atmosphere, they may not come back right away, but they may only come back at CO2 concentrations well below where they first disappeared.
Now, this is such a simplistic question. I'm embarrassed to ask it. But we have, you know, obviously very warm areas with high humidity and a lot of cloud cover. So what is it about the increase in temperature and the CO2 emissions that causes the clouds to dissolve?
It's not a simple question at all. So it's not just a question of temperature. Of course, you're right. There are plenty of warm areas with clouds. So our study specifically addressed these stratocumulus clouds. So they're prevalent over eastern portions of subtropical oceans, so off the west coast of continents, off California, off Peru, Namibia, and Angola. So it's just about this specific type of cloud. They're very important. Again, they cover about a fifth of the tropical oceans, but there are many other clouds that just because they disappear, it doesn't mean other clouds disappear. And I can try to explain how it happens, and it's not entirely simple. But these clouds are quite special in that most clouds are driven by heating from below that leads to air rising. And when the air rises, water vapor condenses, form cloud droplets, you get a cloud. And these clouds, you still have moist air rising from the ocean surface upward, that circulation of the air rising is really driven by cooling at the cloud top. There's cooling through radiation upward. So basically these clouds are giant radiator fins that cool by radiating heat upwards that propels air parcels down that then come back up and nourish the cloud with moisture. And that loop is disrupted when you put more carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The cooling of the clouds at the top doesn't work very well anymore. And that's ultimately what leads to their disappearance.
And the disappearance of the specific type of cloud that you're looking at here, this kind of offshore or coastal, west coastal sort of cloud cover that covers much of Seattle much of the year, I guess, because that would be same type, right? Or is that different?
There are stratocumulus clouds in Seattle. They are everywhere, really, on Earth. It's the most frequent cloud type on Earth. Our study addressed more specifically the clouds at somewhat lower latitudes, like what we have off California.
Okay. If just those sorts of clouds left, how much of a temperature rise would you expect to see?
Just losing those stratocumulus clouds gives you about 14 degrees Fahrenheit warming globally.
Just with those?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. We have a question that comes from Nick in Santa Ana. Are the only barriers to factoring cloud cover into the current climate models a lack of computational power?
That's the primary barrier, but that barrier is huge. So you need computers several billion times faster than the fastest computer we have to resolve these clouds globally. And we're not going to get that in the next few decades.
All right. And Jim Hollywood, I think, asking essentially what I was asking you, with higher temperatures, wouldn't you have more vaporous steam coming up, creating clouds, sort of what we think of as Florida, you know, thunderstorms in the summer kind of a weather? And you say that's a whole different phenomenon.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So you would think more evaporation means more clouds. And for sure, in a warmer climate, you have more evaporation. But for these specific clouds, actually, more evaporation means fewer of them. And that's curious why. So evaporation means there's more vapor in the air, but when the vapor condenses to form droplets in the clouds, it releases what we call latent heat. It warms the air around it. That gives the air a kick to propel it upward. So it makes turbulence. And what this turbulence does is mix the cloud air with the much drier air above the clouds. And so more evaporation leads to stronger turbulence in the clouds, to more mixing with the dry air, and that ultimately actually works against the existence of the clouds.
Such an interesting study. We really appreciate your coming in to talk with it. What's been the feedback since publication?
I think it's an interesting study, and there will be more research needs to be done to pinpoint more precisely, say, at which greenhouse gas concentrations this feedback, this instability can arise. I think, like many studies, it will trigger more research, and that's sort of the best possible outcome.
Yeah, that's good outcome for you that you prompted that. Tapio Schneider, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.
We appreciate it. Coming over from Caltech down the street from our studios, where he's professor of environmental science and engineering, lead author of the study looking at the effect of the planet's warming on cloud cover, particularly the kinds of clouds we have throughout much of June. June gloom, we call it here in Southern California. Coming up, your best party crashing or gate crashing story at a public event. 866-893-KPCC. Back after a live update from the always entering legally Hetty Lynn Herdes.